Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter.
Comes the sun. And thank you everyone for listening in. This is Andrew Fetter. Welcome to When Pigs Fly. And of course that was George Harrison and the Beatles doing Here Comes the Sun. What a perfect song for this spring, because it's all sunny and everything. Seems like everything starts, perfect timing, perfect situations. It's amazing how we go through seasons, and seasons also, we go through seasons in life too. Things are renewed, go through certain situations, and then of course the winter, and then restart again. Sort of the cycle of life and the cycle of circumstances, and sort of everything goes in a wheel, turn around and around and around. And it's always for the betterment, and life does do go on. Before I go into my show, I would like to make a couple announcements for some very special guests that will be coming on my show. One of which is actually next week, and this is one you definitely want to listen to. His name is Micah Hanks. Of course, he's the author of UFO Singularity. You may have heard of him in other shows or other places. He's an extraordinary writer, researcher, lecturer. He also has a radio personality, like I said, and he's worked in various variety of issues, particularly in the scientific concepts and unexplained phenomena, how they relate. And over the last decade, his research has examined a variety of approaches in studying these unexplained cultural phenomena and human historical experiences and events. And the prospects, of course, with technological future as we as a species of humanity and how it will be influenced within our science. He's also author of Magic, Mysticism, and the Molecule. I really look forward to having him on my show. Of course, that is next week. And definitely want to hear that. That's on April 12th. And there's a lot of changes. I will make those announcements on April 12th as well. So I look forward to that. New changes, new beginnings. Now on April 19th, I have another extraordinary guest that will become. His name is Dr. Jim Stein. And of course, he's author of the book called Paranormal Equation, a new scientific perspective on clairvoyance and other phenomena. And I look forward to that as well. And of course, his book explains that the new science and the perspective on the remote viewing and clairvoyance in this particular book. And we're going to get into that very subject, how science meets the unexplained. And I always find it very fascinating how science and some people call it esoterics or metaphysics are overlapping each other in these particular times. And they're converging, which explains a lot of things, explains our science and possibly our expanding the consciousness of humanity. Just think about how we thought of the world before Einstein came up of relativity. And, you know, science does definitely reflect our humanity and can adjust. And unfortunately, sometimes politics and sometimes archaic religion gets in the way of it, such as in the past, we've had a religion sort of stifle Copernicus in the world as it turns around with the influence on Galileo and such on science, thinking the world's still flat. We still have people who have issues with dealing with science with stem cell research. We still have people who have issues in knowing the real truth regarding, in this context in politics, regarding what the truth about true climate change and how the association has nothing to do with the carbon model as they keep on proposing. In fact, it's actually electromagnetic systems within our environment, which is actually a more correct understanding of our world, since we are energy. It's a layering of energies and changes. So, and also, of course, the medical sciences. Hopefully, they're starting to change too. Medicine has not caught up to actual science. They still treat us like we're Newtonian car parts. They look at us like how we, Dr. Bruce Lipton once said, they do studies and investigations on our bodies utilizing quantum theory or quantum physics, such as MRIs and CAT scans and X-rays, utilizing looking at us as energy, which in reality all we are is energy. And yet, when they try to fix us, they fix us like a Newtonian car part, you know, with pills, cutting out parts, and whatnot. So, in fact, that has a lot to do with more politics and the truth of the matter. And, you know, if we looked at us fixing our energy, well, you know, pharmaceuticals wouldn't like that too much. They wouldn't need the pills as much. But those things are changing, and I know for a fact, I know some scientists across the world, I know one in particular, is coming out with a new approach. It looks almost like Star Trek. It reminds me of where they utilize more electromagnetic energy to heal people. I had a recent guest not far off who utilized it in more of a spiritual way, but to help somebody spiritually, but has been known to be utilized. Like they use electromagnetic energy to actually heal bone now. So it is there. It's just that medicine hasn't caught up. Again, it's about politics and economics. And the same thing about climate change and what the truth of that is, it has more to do about economics than the reality. And who's benefiting by pushing the carbon model as opposed to the electromagnetic model, and why we still use fossil fuels as opposed to using free energy, which radiant energy is at our disposal as we speak. So, I mean, a lot of things have that, but that's for here and now. And today's subject, of course, and of course this interrelates with the rescue syndrome. And I always find it quite fascinating how, well, not fascinating, sometimes it's saddening to a large extent. I remember, I mean, I was working back in the day, and I know people go, what the hell did you do that for? I did work for Obama campaign back in 08. And the only thing that used to get to me and it used to weird me out was the effect that of the savior mentality. And it's not something new. This has gone on for thousands upon thousands of years. There's always been so many people have always looked out for wanting the savior, somebody to come and save them. I mean, it's written in the Bible to conjure up, even though in the Bible it never really says that, but people in their own morph way of looking at things conjure it up, so to speak. Because when things are bad, they look for some kind of light at the end of the tunnel. It's understandable. Of course, the light at the end of the tunnel, they look for a person to save them. It's like they look for a Moses to come save them. But if, you know, recently, I just did a couple of last shows I don't want to get into about Passover, but the reason why Moses never mentioned in what the little prayer Seder that Jews do in the Seder is to make sure that you're not looking at, it wasn't Moses who saved them, it was sort of they themselves with God. So it was God ultimately, which is us. So, and everything, right? The whole universe. So that was the approach. It was never about there's some person to rescue you. But unfortunately, we have that. I mean, look at today. There's the Savior. Where's the Savior? Where's the Messiah? Where's the Rescuer? Then there's the Mashiach or the Mahdi. I mean, and then what are we then? Who are we then? What are we? I mean, it's saddening. We look for a Superman to fix our problems. We look for somebody to come to save the day. And so we definitely will get into this again, but first I want to get into that, oh, please, someone rescue me, Mattel, but can't come to save the day. But the question is why and what? Why do we have this and what do we have it and how not to have this? And I'll definitely get that toward the end of this show. But first, I have to go into applications of some things that I thought felt important with prophecies and how they're referenced. And then, of course, is what is the Messiah, or more correctly, the Masonic Age. And this gets a part of the savior mentality of the Western Hemisphere, particularly. Whether it's Jewish or Christian or even Islamic, there's the anointed one. The anointed one, of course, everybody thinks of the Messiah to come save, is pure and blah, blah, get us out of the lost wilderness. And that is because the anointed one is supposed to be of a king, a kingdom, you know, king. Because, of course, in the Bible, it says the anointed was like, was David was anointed and Solomon was anointed. So it's interesting to note that people look for a particular person to save them. During the Holocaust, Jews were looking for the most extreme levels, wanting to help them be saved, right? They needed a savior. They're looking for a Moses. It's been history. They always had something like that in here and there. But it wasn't really here and there. It was more a broader scale. There was one person or this person. Like I said, there's Moses, but was it really just Moses? That's the point. It wasn't Moses. So a lot of this goes back into conundrum of events when things are really bad. Even during the time of Jesus, when he was in his lifetime, it was a really bad, bad time. And for Jews, it was turning events. And if you have a picture of the history, and I'm going to get into this a little bit, but I don't want to get too much into this historical part because that's not what the show is about, is the reference with Jesus and a little scan of history during that time so you have a better picture of understanding that. First of all, you have to know what Jesus was. Jesus was a very He was called a Nazir. Nazir is a sect. They were very, 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 very devout Jews. They're almost, you can look at them almost like today as the Hasidim. They're that religious, very extreme. So if they saw the ordinary wasn't religious enough, they wanted to be more so. So you have to come from, that's where he was coming from. They wanted more extreme religious sense within their spirituality. And if you had to do one time, they would do 10 times. That's how far they would think, okay? So you have to understand where that picture comes from. Now, during this time, there was like a king named King Harald. And before he became, or as he was becoming king, before that, Judea at the time, their arch enemy was Greece. Of course, they had kicked out Greece some few hundred years before that out of Judea. The Jews had kicked, the famous Hanukkah thing with the Maccabees and all that. And eventually, they had a series of kings. And they had kicked out Greeks or Greek Syrians, whatever. So their arch enemy was Greece. And who was at the time, the arch enemy of Greece at the time, was the Romans. And so they naturally actually allied them. So they had a formal alliance with Rome for some hundred plus years because of the threat of Greece. And then eventually what happened was King Harald became whatever king. And just he was, again, the priest didn't realize that this guy was pretty vicious. He was very corrupt. He was very Saddam Hussein-like, very much so if you want to equate that in a perspective. A very dictatorial, totalitarian, militia, very vicious. I mean, he would kill his family members just to be king. And he also killed off the priesthood or the priests inside the temple and then allowed his alliance to secure his throne, his crown, allow the Roman legions or garrisons to be on Judean soil, and that changed everything. That's when the whole situation within Judea changed. It's when Rome actually took hold of Judea. That was when they actually became part of the Roman Empire, not before that. And then, so it was out of politics, not even by war, that Rome took over Judea. And then, of course, they were sitting there and controlling it and got rid of the priest. And the priest, of course, were Herod priests, which were very corrupt. And they're basically pawns for both the Romans and the king, King Herod. So this is where the background of where he came from. And it essentially trickled down, having corrupt organized religion, you know what that is. So, and where they all are. But during the time, it was really bad. And then people were getting killed and slaughtered. And it was dire straits for a lot of Jews. I mean, just imagine getting, there wasn't one or two. It was like hundreds getting killed. I mean, you saw what happened in Sandy Hook. Just imagine that was an everyday event in Judea. So that was an everyday event. So you put that as a background. And then they're looking for somebody as a savior to come save them. So that's what I was saying. They're looking for somebody to come and be the anointed one, the Messiah. So people are looking for somebody to change things. And that has to go to a mentality where people are. I mean, even today, what does that reflect about people? You know, I want you to think about where the mentality, where the self-worthiness, the world self-righteousness within a person, and why they're looking for somebody else. And I'm going to get into that. Now, you will hear, and then here it gets to the reality of what the Masonic era and what the Masonic age as opposed to the person. And you'll hear passages throughout some people saying, and they'll apply this to the Messiah times, and they're as a particular person, but there never really was never a person. It was a time period. It was a reference. I mean, people I've heard say, all the Bible is made up, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it probably is, and a lot of things are changed and adjusted. But if you look at from the original source, and especially the first five books of Moses in Hebrew, there is actually numerically almost like a computer chip. It has a pattern to it, which is beyond just the literal sense of it. And a lot of stuff in there is not to be literally taking, but more of a, well, there's history literally taking, but there's also, to some extent, more of a parables of telling stories, explanations of how we live or who should live or how we are. It's like any day, anybody telling stories. But there's one placement, or I guess I call it like I would say parable, one phrase that Christians often utilize in referring to the messianic age, and it comes from Isaiah, of course. I'm not talking, there's the, you know, the old famous one where you shall turn your like weapons into plowshares and all that stuff. That's actually the famous one. But you'll also hear, and this is in Isaiah 40, 3 through 5, and I'm reading from the actual translation from Hebrew into English, and it says, "Clear ye the wilderness the way of the Lord, make plain in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be lifted up, and every mountain and hill shall be lowered, and the rugged shall be made level, and the rough places a plain, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of the Lord had spoken." And what this is referring to was not a particular person. They're thinking, assuming it is a person, and that's what it, I mean, it clearly, if you think about it, what is it really saying? It is talking about a path, a pathway, making a way within, let's say you have a forest and you're lost. I don't know where to go. It's telling people you have to have a direction, a way to head toward. And the way is for you. And it's also telling a great way. It's you being God, our God. And where things are being leveled and everything's being, because it's really simplified. We make things more complicated than they really are. If you remove all those hills and valleys and level them, you'll see the really real thing. It's even beyond what we think of flesh or something. It's in real. And what it meant was, it shall be revealed as all flesh, those all humanity, all flesh, all humanity will be revealed. And that is the sense of being more awareness, awakened. That's sort of the sense of things, that we will all become more aware of the godliness. Get it? We're all becoming more aware of what the reality is. So it's clearing all the things. It's not. It's seeing in an equal, a real eye, and a perspective of the reality of our universe. That's what's removing all the hills and valleys, move the forests, because we tend to look at things what we see as opposed to what they are. It's taking away the five senses. It's showing you can't see atoms, you can't see energy. It's showing that in reality what we are. And finding the glory of the God that is within it will be revealed is the key, which goes into a paraphrase, which I remember somebody saying this is actually a famous rabbinical thing, and it was about the key, how will a human find the true spark of the godliness within himself, and there's called the key. There's a key to it. How would the humans know where this key is? So they didn't want to make it easy. So there's an old story, and this is how it goes. The angels had the key, and they were asking God, where should they put the key? And then one of the angels said, well, maybe we'll stick on the highest mountain. And God said, no, eventually humanity will find it there. So finally he goes, well, maybe we'll stick in the deepest ocean. And God said, no, man will find it there too. And he goes, then one other angel said, I got it. I know where I should put it. I'll put it in the place that humanity will least likely look for it. And you know what that place was? It was within the heart. And we often look outside ourselves for something as opposed to within ourselves. And this goes back to a paraphrase, which I'll read later, that even Jesus said, another faith like Buddha, and throughout the theology, they keep on hints of where it is. It's always within ourselves. We're constantly looking outside when it's always been us. And that goes back to the rescuer mentality, the messianic, the Messiah, the Buddha, the Jesus, the Mahdi, the Mashiach, the Christ, the Buddha, whatever you want to call it, the name, the Krishna, I don't care whatever name you use. It's within you. It's not outside. It's not a person. It's us. It's we as a collective. And it's really that simple. I mean, and then what I was talking here, it's really about taking a path, our path. It's clearing the way, the path. And what is also removing the hills, the mountain valleys, and lower than making everything simplified is removing the path and relying on all limitations, assumed limitations were going to be removed. And for what and for who? Removed so that you can be aware of the true essence of God. I mean, the last line I said is about the times of ascension. We, not one, we all, that these bodies that we are within, these physical forms will become aware of the essence of God. This is what it really is. It's about our journey, the journey that we're taking. It's not about one person coming and saving us. It's about our path, our journey, our way we're going. It has nothing to do with one person, this person, this person. It's us as a collective. It's humanity. It's talking as a whole, since we're all connected. And there's no one to be anointed. There's no one to be a king or Messiah. There's no one Christ to save you. There never was. There never will be. There's nobody out to save you. There's no rescuer out there who's just going to come and magically appear. That's all Disney Walt bullshit to basically keep you on a hook. That's a carrot. That's a lie. That is the biggest lie. That is a distraction for who? It's taking from the very worth who you are. Now, I know a lot of people I've heard and they talk about, well, aren't these the ends of days and the beginning of days? Well, ends of days comes from, it's interesting because it's really never ends of days. It's the ends of certain time periods and the beginning of new time periods. And the passage comes, and this is from the Judaic Christian place area, but it's really originally from a place in the Bible under the Torah or part of the Torah, which is called Numbers or Midbar in Hebrew. It is called 24:14. You can read it. It says, now, behold, I go unto my people and come. I will announce to thee what this people shall do to thy people in the end of days. So what that was referring to is it wasn't even about that. It's about periods of time, meaning toward each ends of days. If you look in the translation, they take it out of context. It's mean from every time period, there's a new time period. So every people has a consciousness and understanding of a certain time. You know, look where we were as a humanity, let's say, in the 1940s. We're not necessarily the same, but there's some elements still holding onto it. But if you go to broader contents in a period, because that's only, like, what, 60 years? But if you look at over 100 years, 200 years, look where humanity is. I mean, even the short time, our technology has changed, even our mentality. And so we're going through ages, ends of days. So things come through different ages. And yes, we are in these times of the messianic times. You know, very much so. And what the messianic time is basically becoming more aware, more on a gargantuan, which I have a client that uses that name, that word a lot, gargantuan time where people becoming more aware of their spiritual connection to us versus within the universe. They're becoming more aware how truly divine and connected we are with every species, with everything, and whatever path they're on, they're moving toward that further and further. But it's all within the path, and it's clearing the fields. Everything's becoming leveled. Everything's becoming matched because you're becoming in the true essence of what we are within humanity. We're finding how we're all really connected to each other. But there are these times that have specific symbolizations of these times. And it's not coincidental these are happening in these times. It's not coincidental that certain events have transpired either. I mean, there's cause and effect, but some things are sort of destiny, sort of happening. If you read like Ezekiel, which is pretty amazing. Of course, you know Ezekiel. He's the dude who saw and spoke with the ETs. You have to reread that. I know people read that in English. Do go ahead and read that if you like. But it says in English, you'll see Son of Man. But in Hebrew, it actually says Ben Adam. So when you literally translate it literally from Ben Adam, which means Son of Man, that's how you say humanity. When you say, hey, what's humanity doing? They say, or mankind, or they'll say Ben Adam. That means all humanity. So when you see the word Son of Man, just cross that out in your mind or whatever. It's talking humanity. So who is he speaking of or to? It's speaking of humanity. Here, Ben, Son of Man, blah, blah, blah. He's speaking to all of it, all the world. And that's why it's really important to understand that. And it is really clear. If you read within it, you can start from, I think it's like 37 on. And how even the nation of Israel, how they were basically spread across all around the world, right? You know, it talks about the Jews all over the place, and all of Israel, the Judah tribe, and Ephraim, right? They're all spread all over the world. And then it talks about how they re-come back to their homeland, and they rise up again as a nation. And it talks about the hate, surrounding hatred toward the people of Israel. And even talks of Magog, which is Iran. It talks about the Arabs, the Palestinians, the Egyptians, and the Turks. I mean, if you read it, it's amazing if you read it. It's sort of like, wow, I'm reading what's really going on now. And it really is. It's actually, that is, you know, I always tell people, that is actually really to a T what's happening. What's fascinating about that part of Ezekiel is a long time ago I did a documentary that we're trying to get distributed, but we're still working on it. And it was with the Hopi. And one of the son of late Chief Mike, actually said that these are actually the same prophecies. And when you listen to the Hopi prophecies, they're like in line, literally to detail. But Ezekiel, it's amazingly very the same. In fact, I'm telling you, they told me that, hey, you know what? They're the same. So it's not by coincidence, and I'm not going to get into why or what. I think personally that there's an extraterrestrial connection to that, but that's for here or now. But you should read it, and like I said, you can start even from 38, which gets more into a lot of very heavy issues. It talks about the two sticks coming together, and that's called like the two sticks of Judah and the stick of Joseph or the Joes. And look what's happening. They're coming together. They're fighting the Manashe tribe in Thailand. They're fighting all these lost tribes around from the people of Israel. And they're coming back. They're even now, not to go through it more, but even amongst, and I hate to say it, but amongst, not to hate to say it, but it is, they're fighting amongst even Native Americans having same or similar DNA as the Jews. Ex-haplotype and also a high amount of Cone Y chromosomes, particularly in Jews or Native Americans or indigenous within the Four Corner area, which shows a very connection, the belief system. So who knows, maybe they are another Menashe tribe, another lost. And if that's maybe the two sticks, and what they're really talking about is putting them together. It's talking about pulling the hound. It's really a reference of all of us coming together. So yeah, these are the signs of these times. It really is. Things are changing. What you read and what's happening is happening, but it's to push us together. It's a reference. And it is often referred within this. You'll see the ending of the time, the beginning of times. It's the references of the ascension, both physically and spiritually. And again, there was never, ever, ever it was about a king or one person. It's about us, and it always has been. I mean, you'll read in Isaiah, again, a prophecy of Isaiah, everybody goes back to, and it shall come to pass in the end of days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established at the top of the mountains, that she be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. What that is, I mean, there is talking about the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem, blah, 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 and it's ascending, but it's also a parable of what we are, that we are going to be drawing toward the light. We're heading upward. We're actually ascending. Think about what a top of a mountain is. It's us going upward. We're ascending. We're going up. So it's talking about humanity at large is going to go up. Now, people are going, well, what about all these other people full of hate? Yeah, in time, they sort of dissipate. That's all the pain and suffering, the strapping, the ripping off. As people reincarnate, you're going to see people who are more, why you have children who are, some people call them the Indokill kids or rainbow kids or whatever these names they utilize. It's not that they're just special. It's because it's matching to where our world is. Earth is literally increasing its frequency. It has been. It hit the apex of change since 2012 in December, where we become more of a positive energy as opposed to negative. So, yeah, we are ascending. We are now changing. And people, if you're not adapting to this change into a positive situation, then, yes, we are definitely going through that special period where it definitely affects us and how it does affect us. So we're definitely entering that special period. So it is it is both destiny and our choice. So if somebody gives you a door, this door is now open for us to take to it. A lot of these prophecies and things that have been told in the past, where even though it was maybe thousands or hundreds of years in the past, they do apply today just as people who do things and say things even of now. They do apply. And it's for more at large. Hopefully everybody understands that. Now, there's another famous passage, and you've probably heard it, and it's also taken out of context too. But let me explain to you, and it's often utilized by both Christians and Jews as a form of what the messianic or messiah kind of thing. And the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf, and the lion, and the falting together, and a little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed, their young ones shall lie down, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. And the suckling, a child shall play on the hole as of S, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the basilisk's den. And they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. So think about that. What is that in reference? It's basically telling the enemies that there's not a victim or victor. There won't be a raper or rapee or murderer or murderee. It's a time where people becoming more at peace. That is where the direction we're heading to. These are the heirs, and this is where you'll see this is we're going still through that transition time. This is where you see things happening, you'll see atrocities, but we are definitely in these times moving forward, where it becomes us, and that eventually Earth will be whole. There will be, some people call it, I heard somebody utilize the word landing, like we're like at peace. You know, that was a really interesting word that somebody I saw heard use. It's like the field that is at peace. So, and I believe that's where we're heading into. And that's where we will collectively head into that situation, but we aren't all there. But we all do as a whole. It's not one person, three people. It's all of us, because we're all one universe. We're all one consciousness. Humanity has one conscious thing, is one person. That is all humanity. So I just wanted to re-clarify that. Now, there was another famous passage. You probably have heard this one utilized too within both Judaic and Christianity about Masonic Age. And I shall put my teachings in their inward parts and write them in where? In their heart. And it shall be to them for God, and they shall be to me for the people. They shall no longer teach one another, and a man, his brother, saying, know God, for they shall all know me, for the least of them to be the greatest of them. So basically, it's showing that there's nobody going to be above you. It's where is going to find you? It's within you. Where it was written in your heart. What did I just tell you? The key in your heart. This little magic, the little spark, the little thing. It's all going in you. It's all your connection. The love within you is the compassion that we always talk about. People hear about compassion is the vehicle to experience the divine connection between all of us. When you love somebody, it's because you come to the reality that you are connected with them. When you love God is a term that you have divine connection between the universe and you as a soul. There's a Kabbalistical expression of man's soul, or human, man's soul, is of a feminine nature, and the universe of being masculine nature. And when they come together, it creates like a sexual energy, a high, orgasm, a spiritual orgasm. That's like when you feel oneness within the universe, you get, oh, ooh, this buzz kind of thing. That's because that is the way you're experiencing the reality. That's an experience of it. We're experiencing what it is. And I think I've told you in the past, especially the last couple of shows, how we go through times of being limited and then non-limited. Limited and non-limited. And non-limited is our reality, who we are as spirits. And we're put in these limited bodies to go back the upper direction. Because you that's the only way you can grow. Your soul can grow just being for what it is. It grows by being placed in a limited situation and growing out from it. So we learn our senses and things like that. We come from something that's our desires, our physical desires, our alter ego, our vanity things, looking and assuming things are limited, assuming what we see is what the reality when it isn't, then working the opposite direction. We are truly amazing as humans. Just think how jealous of other souls, other extraterrestrials might be watching us and saying, wow, look at these people. They get to go in this limited form and work their way out of it. We do have this opportunity. It allows us to go at a greater consciousness. That is what allows us. We become a greater spirituality. It's giving us the opportunity to grow exponentially. Now, there's another thing that's said, and this is said in Joel's is in English 3:1-3:2, and I shall pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, your elders shall dream dreams, your young shall see visions. In those days I shall pour out my spirit also upon the servants and the handmaids, meaning that there's nobody above or below. It's going to, then when you're talking dream and dreams, visions and visions, means that we're really going to start visually seeing things for who they are. We're going to have the spirit. We're becoming extremely spiritual in these days. Feeling very connected. Not just on our physical form, but spiritual. Our dreams. And that's it's seeing beyond what's in front of our eyes. Because you cannot see energy with your eyes. You can sense it with your hands. You may feel it even to some extent. But actually, it's moving, and you're moving. So, and we're definitely going to be expanding into these situations, and understanding this. I said this last week. I told you a famous quote. It was by Rabbi Luria. He's a famous Kabbalist. He died when he was early 20s. People think he was Ben Zakkai, who wrote the Zohar. They thought he was a reincarnate because when he knew it like front end, back end by heart. He was extremely a great healer. And ironically, he was also friends with a lot of Sufi Islamists. Sufi and Kabbalists, they used to meet and they used to come back and forth into Sfat. Particular Rumi was particularly friendly with Rabbi Abu Lafia and as well as Rav Luria and his followers. They're all very connected. And that's why you see an overlap between Sufi Islam and Kabbalism. They're very things overlapping. But anyway, I don't want to digress into that. Isaac Luria, he once said, or the Ari, every created entity has a spark of godliness within it. a pinpoint of divinity that constitutes its soul. When we utilize something to serve the Creator, we penetrate its shell of mundanity, revealing and realize its divine essence. Thus, we elevate these sparks and reuniting them with their source. And what I'm saying is, within this, it gets into the very issue of what those little sparks are, the sparks within us, the connection. That's the sparks are the energy. It's the energy within us. That's what makes us. That's what our soul is. That's our godliness. I mean, in the past, there was... So that's what I'm trying to get to understanding this. And then you're probably going, why does this have to do with, again, rescuer and Messiah? Because I'm trying to get you to understand there never was something outside to save you. It was you who were going to save yourself. It was you who was going to fix yourself. It was you to, and I'm talking you both individually and humanity at large, since we are one. But getting to also, there was a point that Jesus once said, if you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. And what he was saying, very simply, was you. Wasn't Jesus going to save your ass? No. Wasn't somebody else going to save you? Wasn't some rescuer going to come and help you? It was you. It was you. It's you to bring within you what is the reality. And it, what was being forth, is you, who you really are. Not somebody telling you what you are. Not even me. It's called you look into yourself. Find out you know what's in you. Look and feel who you are. Your spirit. You can feel your spirit. You feel things, see, all these things. They're just slight touches of you when you dream, your recognitions of experiences, your feelings towards certain situations, your affinity for things, these are part of you. This is what they were talking about. These are just one, I'm talking very like a layer of things. There's no no direct, there's no limited amount of who you are. So again, when I'm elaborating on the ascension of who we are, it's about us as being Messiah. We individually, collectively are the anointed ones. We are the Buddhas. We are the Christ. We are the Messiahs. We are the Mahdis. We are the Mashiachs. And it's enough of the savior complex. Obama won't save you. Jesus won't save you. That's all pure bunk. Bullshit. It's to keep you in control. To knock down your self-worth. If you have your self-worth, who you are, it is about you. It is. There's no one to save you but you. It starts with that spark, what I just talking, that loving within yourself. It's not being narcissistic, but your true self. It's also taking responsibility of the past. But taking part of the responsibility doesn't mean to play poor, pity me, and suffer, or feel ultra guilty about it. And yes, no one died for your sins on some cross. That's all pure bonk bullshit to make you think that you're nothing. You are everything. You're part of everything. Your thing, sins, by the way, does not mean something bad, it just me went the wrong way. There's two ways, right way, wrong way. You got unfortunate one, maybe we all did wrong things. Nobody's did anything positive. So now there you have to take ownership of those karmic wrongs, the wrong ways, and fix them. You'll learn from them. So but don't be angry with others over, or don't blame other people. And ultimately it was yourself. Ultimately it was yourself that chose these. It was your choice. But you learn from the past, period. You learn from it. You don't digress. You go, okay, I made a mistake. You take responsibility for the consequences of it. I did something, do the crime, pay the crime, how they say. That's it. And then you learn from it. And then things that you may see that maybe hit you, that might be hard, a suffering, that's part of karma. But karma creates the illusion of suffering, and suffering creates more delusion. And it's all ego-based. It's all upon that. How you reverse it. How you reverse the ego. How do you reverse this? Somebody, when someone is so true, and I tell this all the time to people, how do you reverse karma? Well, first you obviously have to go through it. But you have to do something of merit or meritous. Either you give something or help something. Do good deed. It's by your deed. It's like what I just said. First, we become aware of things. Then it's by your choice. Now we do the deed. Of course, it's a blessing knowing that you've just become aware. And then you do the deed by doing something meritous. Merit meaning giving somebody something, or meritous information to help somebody else other than yourself. This creates blessing. This is just a start. This is just a little element of it. And then you give yourself a direction. That's the future. You don't live in the future. That's a direction. You can't say, a lot of people go, oh my God, I'm going to do this. And they're never even in the moment. They're trying to leap forward. They're trying to be farther. They're thinking about the bills they have to pay. They think about the things they have to do in the future. And they're never in the moment. You have to be in the moment. Be there. It's only a direction. And it all starts with who? You. You are your own rescuer. You are your own Messiah. You are the Mashiach. You are the Christ. You are the Buddha. And it all starts with self-worth, self-love. Is the godliness within you? Is that a spark, God essence of yourself? And I ask you, look around you. You are deeply connected with everything around you. Yes, even the ones you have tragically maybe had things happen to. They are all connected. That is the fact. We are connected to them. Yeah, the ones you may hate or upset about. That's part of that hatred you have to get over. That's part of that karmic cycle I just told you about. But remove it is a start. Learn from it, move forward. That's how you remove those karmic circles. The very ones that you despise, they are you. They're part of you. It's to move on. We are, in fact, all one. That is the fact. We are all simply one giant ship, one consciousness. That is what is meant to be one with God, Allah. We are one with all. That includes every living and non-living thing at all aspects. You know, then there's that five aspects that I want to get into. I will suggest that somebody had just spoken to me before, and I think they're highly aligned. People may have heard this through Buddhism, but I think it's really important. And they also discuss it. I remember Confucius had said this, and this is sort of a common theme. But anyway, there's the five. This is called propriety, righteousness, wisdom, benevolence, and sincerity. And if you drew a circle and you put in the middle, you put like sincerity, that would be the you. That's you within it, the sincerity within you. And then you write in four spots. You would write propriety on the top, maybe righteousness on the right. The bottom would be wisdom, left would be benevolence. And it's what are your reactions? We try to keep our sincerity as a whole, as Confucius would say. This is part of changing ourselves, making ourselves better. So like if your wisdom, let's say that would be part of your mind. If you're taking drugs or doing alcohol, that affects your mind, right? So that would cut a piece of your sincerity out. If you have about your benevolence, you think about killing someone maliciously or doing something mean or vicious, that'd cut out your benevolence, right? If you're talking about doing something righteous, that would be telling the truth, being honorable, that would cut that out, right? Lying, cheating, that would cut out of your sincerity. Propriety, being the propriety is being your own desires, you know. You lead by your own vanity kind of thing. And some people say of sexuality, and I think they superimpose that, but I personally feel that it's not what you sexually can go ahead and have things, but if when you utilize that as your own, out of your own ego base, then it cuts into your sincerity. So they're just for five elements, you know, that aspects. And then, of course, when you go in the beginning, there's changing your beginning. There is only one but you who can make that change. You can start by changing your thoughts. These ways are just, I don't know, changing your thoughts. And you start with baby it. You know, allow God, I'm having negative thoughts. And why are you having those things? Why are you thinking negative? Think about why. And then you can fix it. Become aware of it. If you see something negative, then go, why am I thinking? Change your thoughts. Change your tapes, as my teacher, Denise St. Clair, used to say. You always have to change your tapes. Our universe is what our thoughts are. And we influence. They're part of action. It's the beginning. So it's and things are of a constant change. So you've always chosen. You've chosen to be in this body. You chose your experiences. Yes, you did choose those experiences. Now you can choose to grow. You chose them, these experiences, to heal, to grow, to love, to gain wisdom, to understanding, or just simply to experience. But you ultimately chose them. And no matter how harsh, they're you. You can produce change on the micro level as well as the macro level by learning to move on. But there's no knight in shining person riding on a white horse to save you. There's no Messiah or Jesus or Christ or Buddha or Mahdi or Mashiach. It's only you who does this. With you and only you can do this. And it's like there was a famous... there was a Hopi elder who once said, and they've never taken ownership, they also never take ownership of words, but this is a famous thing, and I posted this one day on Facebook a couple days ago, and people, oh my God, what does this sound so, and it's really 20 years old. I knew directly the people who spoke, but again, they would never take ownership of it, what they said. But I knew indirectly one of the grandson and the daughter who actually said this. And they said, you have been telling people that this is the 11th hour. Now you must go back and tell people that this is the hour. And there are things to be considered. Where are you living? What are you doing? What are your relationships? Are you in the right relationship? Where is your water? Know your garden. It is time to speak your truth. Create your community. Be good to yourself and not look outside of yourself for a leader. This could be a good time. There is a river flowing very fast. It is so great and fast that there are those who will be afraid. They will hold on to the shore. They will feel that they are being torn apart, and they will suffer greatly. Now know that the river has its destination. The elders say that we must let go of the shore and push off into the middle of the river. But we keep our eyes open, our heads above water. See who is in there with you and celebrate. At this time, we are not taking nothing personal, at least of ourselves. For the moment that we do, our spiritual growth comes to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and your vocabulary. All that we do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. For we are the ones that we have been waiting for. I think that says it all. We are the ones that we've been waiting for. And there's no time for the lone wolf. You don't need to look for some leader to save your day. It's time to fix yourself. To move forward. And don't fight it. Go with the flow of it. The things are coming to a positive things. Try to hold on the shorts, holding on to your old limitations, your old ways that were not true, your limitations. You're not limited. It's getting to your true self, your true nature, some people call it. And with that, I wish to thank you all. I'm going to close out on a very cool song. I'm sure you guys all heard it. It's with George Harrison when he's singing My Sweet Lord. And I wish you all, God bless you all, and have a glorious, glorious weekend. Until next time, next week, again, I have a very special guest. If you listen, it is Micah and Micah Hanks. And I look forward to that. And God bless you all. And have, again, a glorious, glorious weekend. And with My Sweet Lord, it is George Harrison.
I